Good afternoon and welcome to the Regarding ID podcast series. I'm your host, Chris Corum, executive editor with Avizian Publishing, and we're talking today with Richard Allen, a principal consultant with Consult Hyperion out of the UK, to discuss the chip and pin rollout and get a look at how that has gone and additionally how it has impacted the fraud rates with the credit card and other transactions there in the UK. Richard, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
To begin, for those readers or listeners who aren't as familiar with this as others, can you give us kind of a background on the chip and pin program there and when it began, how the rollout has gone, and the level of acceptance maybe from your perspective there in the UK?
Okay. I guess this probably started at the end of the 90s. The fraud figures for card payments in the UK were growing, and round about the millennium time, the banks got together to decide what they could do about it, and the consensus was to introduce some kind of technological solution that would deliver added security and help to eradicate things like counterfeit card fraud, that type of thing. So this all kind of went on at the end of the 90s. And the UK banking industry got together and decided on a standard, adopted a standard, the EMV standard, and decided to roll it out. Now, it was an early implementation of EMV. The French had had a chip and pin solution beforehand, but it was simpler and it wasn't actually an EMV type solution. So, early in 2001, 2002, we started to see the issuance of chip-based credit cards and indeed debit cards in the UK. And that was quickly followed by the introduction of PIN a few years later, and then the full-scale adoption of chip and PIN as a full-blown solution all the way from the merchant through the terminal acquirer, through the issuer and to the cardholder, and that was mandated from about 2005 onwards.
Great.
So we've had a good 3 years of chip and pin, if you like, live and across the whole of the cardholder base in the UK.
How about from the merchant perspective? Is it, it's as I understand it, it's virtually accepted everywhere now that a debit and credit card is accepted? Is that the case?
Absolutely. Everywhere where you see, 99.999%
okay.
of the places where you see the MasterCard or the Visa or American Express brand, the terminal equipment will be chip and pin based.
Great. You mentioned that it was done largely in reaction to increasing levels of fraud. I know, and I know you follow this closely, but the different types of fraud, you know, there's obviously, there's fraud that occurs at a merchant location, and then there's fraud that occurs via stolen cards or occurs online for internet purchases or via phone purchases. Was the chip and pin program designed for certain areas of fraud, or how was that?
Absolutely. So, the areas of fraud which were climbing were instances of counterfeit card fraud. So that's to say, the magnetic stripe details of a card had simply been captured and put onto a fraudulent card. And with the rates of fraud as far as those particular items were concerned, it kind of went up by about a factor of 10 over the 5 years from about 96 to about 2000. So, you know, there was a rapid growth, and the predictions were that by about now, you know, the fraud rates for counterfeit cards based on the mag stripe solution would have just been astronomical. So there was a point at which it was a, if you like, the business case for introducing chip and pin was made quite overwhelming. So it was a fraud prevention measure to eradicate counterfeit magnetic stripe cards, okay. which are used at the point of sale in a terminal. There are also other types of fraud, lost and stolen. So, for example, genuine cards were just simply stolen, or people would lose them, and somebody else could just simply pick them up and start using them if the card holder hadn't reported them as lost or stolen, for example. And again, those fraud rates doubled approximately from 1996 to about, again, 2000, 2001. So, you know, there were growth, there was significant growth in those types of fraud. Other types of fraud, such as, for example, card not present, you know, internet or mail order type fraud, it was around, but it wasn't as significant. So there wasn't a need, if you like, to tackle that type of fraud, at least at that time. And then things like card ID theft, where, you know, things like the whole account was effectively taken over, or cards had been obtained fraudulently. Again, that was pretty insignificant at the time that chip and PIN was adopted in the UK.
Okay, and it seems like then obviously chip and PIN would directly and immediately impact the pretty much all of those fraud categories except for the card not present, I suppose, because if someone was to find my card and walk into a store with it, you know, they would not be able to use it because of the PIN in the chip and PIN environment where they could have used it prior, and certainly the ability to scan a magnetic stripe, read that information, and then create a counterfeit fraud or counterfeit card, the chip capabilities there and the encryption and things would alleviate that threat.
Absolutely. So the combination of the PIN, which is something that I know, rather than a signature that can be easily copied off a card, that and the cryptography that sits on the chip basically really tackled and has pretty well, it hasn't eradicated it completely, but it's certainly achieved the objective in the fraud at the point of sale or the face-to-face, in the face-to-face environment has reduced dramatically. And again, also lost and stolen. You know, it's all very well stealing a card, but if you don't know the PIN, then it's no good to you as a fraudster. So,
sure.
Again, it's tackled that type of fraud as well. And we've seen those fraud figures, they are less than half. They were at the peak around about 2002, 2003.
Yeah, that's great. And I take it then, though, the area that wasn't tackled, being the card not present transactions, likely has grown as a percentage of overall fraud then, probably. One, because the use of that type of transaction certainly has grown immensely in the last 5 years, but also probably it's the only way now, maybe or may become the easiest way, I suppose, of the other options for card fraud at this point.
Yeah, that's right, Chris. There is a rule that fraud migrates,
uh-huh.
And if you make it difficult to use it in a face-to-face environment, you know, what we've seen is that the fraud will simply migrate elsewhere, and that has been to the card not present transaction. So, you know, internet based or mail order, telephone order based, that type of thing. And indeed, you know, that is something that chip and PIN hasn't been able to tackle at all. And so what we've seen is significant growth rates, you know, like 25-35% per annum growth in that type of area, in that type of fraud in the UK since the introduction of chip and PIN. I mean, it was growing anyway, but, you know, it's growing faster now. So, for example, last year, 2007, it was about £250 million, about, I guess that's half a billion US,
mm-hmm.
In card-not-present fraud alone.
Wow.
Which is a significant problem.
Now, I know that in certain countries using their EMV implementations, we've begun to see more of a migration to a one-time password token that may generate, based on the EMV card, a unique ID to authorize a card not present transaction. Is that something that is being used in the UK at this point, or is it just in its starting phases, or what are you seeing in terms of that?
Well, we were involved at the early stages in the specification work for these devices. So everyone in the UK so has their chip and PIN card, but mm-hmm. now we're just beginning to see this year, we're seeing the actual delivery of these devices to individuals. They look like a small calculator type device. They don't actually look particularly technologically advanced. They just have a slot for a card reader, a pin pad, and a display. And inserting the card into the device, pressing a button or two, entering your PIN will give you a one-time password that can be verified by the bank online. So we're beginning to see the emergence of these devices now. And it's to tackle two things. One is the phishing problem, which is separate, really. That's an ID problem that we've seen. You know, we all get phishing emails that are trying to hijack our bank login right. details, that type of thing. And that was it was originally introduced to get around that problem, but it is also being used now for to tackle card not present fraud as well. Now, the thing with card not present, there are also other measures, like in the US you have things like address verification, I think, and over here we have, for example, the code that is known as a CVV2 or a CVC2
right.
On the back of the card, you know, the three-digit code. So there are a number of different ways of tackling this, but certainly now we're seeing the emergence of this little handheld device and the combination of that and the chip and PIN card to come up with a one-time password.
Great.
You know, throughout Europe now, we're chip and PIN is prevalent. As you say, the UK has sort of taken the lead on this to some extent. So in some ways, it's interesting just to observe what's happening here. And it gives an indication of, you know, what could happen elsewhere. I mean, for example, one of the unforeseen consequences is the cross contamination of payment technologies and the fraud opportunities that have resulted. So, I've mentioned card not present fraud, but one of the other types of fraud that we have growing for UK cardholders is actually the a kind of skim and PIN fraud. So this is where you go to pay for something in a merchant, in a retailer, or maybe a gas station, and somebody actually captures your PIN on a camera and reads the details off the chip of your card, and then what they do is they use that to make a counterfeit magnetic stripe card. Now, that means you can then use that counterfeit card overseas, say. You know, in I don't know, say in the Far East or somewhere that doesn't have chip and PIN technology, and you have
yeah.
the PIN, so you can actually withdraw cash, and that is the other area. Overseas ATM cash withdrawals, where we are seeing quite a bit of growth, and that was, if you like, an unforeseen consequence of the introduction of chip and PIN. You know, you're entering your PIN. Instead of just at an ATM like you do in the States, or maybe for the debit transaction, you know, you're using your PIN everywhere, mm. and that means it's more easily compromised.
Interesting. Well, and also you mentioned the fraud migration, say from one type of fraud to another, say from retailer environments to card not present environments. How about, have you seen statistics or talk of the migration, say, from country to country? We've discussed here the impacts potentially that Canada's migration to chip and PIN. Will we see an increase in fraud moving from Canada, say, down to the U.S.? Have you seen or discussed that topic of fraud moving from the U.K. to another European country, say, across the borders, one that might not be as far along in their EMV implementation?
Yeah, that's an interesting. That's an interesting point, and it's not, to be honest, it's not quite so clear cut. But what we've seen is, for example, fraudulent use of UK cards growing a lot more in somewhere like Spain, where their chip and PIN is much further behind, say. So we've seen the increased use of UK cards in Spain, for example, or Italy or parts of Eastern Europe. And the growth in those areas has been higher than you would normally expect. So, you know, that leads us to the conclusion that maybe fraudsters operating in the UK have have obtained cards or card details and are using it overseas. As to whether, you know, there is a big migration overseas, it's difficult really to determine. But what we can say is that card fraud in the UK has been flat for now about 4 or 5 years. It stayed round about £450 million per year overall. And we would have expect to see it, I don't know, round about nearly double that if it hadn't been for the introduction of chip and PIN. So, you know, you have to come up with a, I think you can come to the conclusion that that fraud must have gone somewhere else.
Sure.
But it's actually very difficult to kind of observe it actually migrating to specific countries. But we've certainly seen trends where it's growing in other European countries that are behind in EMV, certainly faster than it is in the UK.
Interesting. Okay, well, that would support the question. And I suppose that's true, though. As you cross borders, it's very hard to know where migration goes other than to look at your own figures and say, hey, it seems to have reduced here. We know that that didn't mean that they went out of the business of fraud. It just probably means that they are elsewhere. So successful in the UK case, though, it certainly sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, if you need reassurance, I believe that the fraud figures for Canada are quite low anyway.
So we'll be
so there
safe.
Isn't that much to come across the border anyway.
that's probably true.
You know, we have the fraud figures in the UK. It's about 0.1% of total card payment revenue is about 0.1% is fraud. I believe Canada is quite a bit lower than that.
Okay. Well, and I have always heard and spoken with many of the association representatives here in the U.S. and big banks and things and card issuers who've said, you know, the level of fraud here compared to the dollar figures that the implementation of an EMV program would cost, they just it doesn't make business sense right now, which is why the U.S. I suppose has been slow to look at the EMV programs and options here. But also many have said there's other drivers that may bring us there rather than just the ROI on the initial rollout. So that's another discussion, I suppose.
That is another discussion. You know, there is, as you say, it's a commercial, it's a business case. You know, a certain amount of fraud is acceptable, and the UK banks have decided that, you know, 0.1% or less is acceptable to them. They can swallow that. They don't need to spend a whole bunch more money rolling out, you know, a host of other countermeasures. But then, you know, if you start looking at what the cost to society, et cetera, then that's a whole different philosophical discussion. Like you say, that's probably for another day.
Great. Well, Richard, that's a great update. I really appreciate all the information. For a moment here, can you give us a little bit more detail on what your areas of practice are there at Consult Hyperion and how people can find out more about the offerings and the services and the research areas that you're looking at?
Yeah, sure. So just briefly, we have been involved quite a bit now in the migration and rollout of contactless technology. You have it in the States, but in Europe it's a chip-based contactless technology. And now we are getting involved more in the area of things like mobile payments using NFC phones, and that's all very new, very wow. And personally, I'm actually looking at some of the security issues around this. So for contactless, you know, there have been additional security areas introduced to make it even more secure. You know, people are worried about the air interface and being able to sniff card details, that type of thing. So that's an area that I'm personally looking at the moment. It's too early to come up with hard and fast like fraud facts for contactless, but it's certainly an interesting area. And as I say, at Consult Hyperion, our focus at the moment is mostly around contactless and mobile contactless using the NFC device. And if anyone wants more details, chyp.com is our site, or indeed contact myself.
That's perfect. All right. Well, thank you very much again, Richard. We've been speaking with Richard Allen, principal consultant with Consult Hyperion, and we will talk to you all soon, and we'll see you next time or hear you next time on the Regarding ID podcast. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.